ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 इदं भगवता नामापूर्णं ब्रह्मसमितम् उच्चमश्लोकचरितं चकरं भगवान् ऋषि निःश्रयश्रय लोकस्य धन्यं स्वस्ति वयतो महा. So, according to our philosophy, this is Thursday, and the 24th of November. Well, anyway, it's actually the first of December. Okay, find the 16 things wrong with this slideshow. It's the first of December, December 1st, and we are going through Canto 3, Chapter 17, verses 21 through 31. Which, of course, is the whole history of how Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakasipu appeared. And that is, of course, a background to why Lord Varaha appeared. And Lord Varaha appeared, of course, because it's a whole story of how the universe was created. This is a basic story, again and again, our cosmology. Of course, everybody has their cosmology. The Egyptians, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses. The scientists try to have a whole creation story. How did we get here? And so this is Maitreya explaining how we got here to Vidura. And in the course of that, which is personal creation, Satarupa and Swayambhuva Manu agree to become biological fathers, mothers, but they're so dispassionate, according to our perspective, way up in the higher planets and don't even think about, you know, any inspiration for gross relations. So you have to get down to the earth level, Bhumandala. But Bhumandala has been, you know, submerged in the Garbhodak Ocean or something like that, Padala, Nether regions by the demons. Where did they come from? Okay, so we're studying this whole thing, and now we're actually the actual appearance of the demons. Hiranyaksha's temper was difficult to control. He had anklets of gold tinkling about his feet. He was adorned with a gigantic garland, and he rested his huge mace on one of his shoulders. So this, of course, is part of a whole series of verses describing Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. And we just go ahead here because we have several verses to read. Okay. Translation to text number 22. His mental and bodily strength, as well as the boon conferred upon him, had made him proud. He feared death at the hands of no one, and there was no checking him. The gods, therefore, were seized with fear at his very sight, and they hid themselves, even as snakes hide themselves for fear of Garuda. Let me read it again. His mental and bodily strength. Mental strength. You see that sometimes we have we're kind of spaced out or something, especially if you get older, you recognize this. But when you wake up, again, your mind is not so clear, or the prana is kind of in the lower part of your body, so it's not making the activity in the brain work very well, so it's hard to form thoughts and things there, you know. So he had great mental strength. He could remember things, he could organize them, put them in different things like that very quickly, you know. Draw up old facts and connect them to new facts. It's like maybe we're just driving in the car and we're thinking about something else, you know, and then some siren goes off and it kind of catches our attention. Then we realize, oh, there's an emergency vehicle coming up, and then we become alert. We tune into our circumstances, see, can I pull over? Are there cars behind me? Who's what's happening? And then is it on a cross street or is it actually in my street? You know, so we're in this kind of lowered consciousness. But as we come to more full consciousness, we actually become more aware. And so we're in the different lokas right now. We're in Indra loka right now. We're in Brahma loka. You know? We're in Goloka. You know? But our consciousness is way down here. So just within our body, as our consciousness raises up, we see things from a more subtle perspective. You know? And of course, the demigods, the devatas, they were all very prominent. You know, to Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. He feared death at the hands of no one. There was no checking him. The gods were therefore seized with fear at his very sight, and they hid themselves as snakes hide themselves for fear of Garuda. Purport, the Asuras are generally strongly built, as described here, and therefore their mental condition is very sound, and their prowess is also extraordinary. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, having received the boon that they would not be killed by any other living entity within this universe, were almost immortal, and thus they were completely fearless. There's, of course, always, you know, a lot of controversy about what is intelligence, and of course there's always this controversy of whether who's smarter, boys or girls. Of course, we know that boys are smarter than girls. But whatever you say, whether you're a boy or a girl, you've got another problem, because generally speaking, about the modern IQ tests and stuff like that, big people are always smarter than small people. Why? I would suggest from our perspective that because these modern IQ tests are testing for material intelligence, they're testing for bodily intelligence. And so if you've got a big body, you've got more structure to hang your memories and your information onto. Yeah. You see that so much of our information and memories is tied into our body, especially in the mode of ignorance. If you're like a carpenter, when you're measuring something, you'll go like, you know, 5 3/32 inches. You kind of actually grab it with your body and hold it till you go over and make the measurement on the board and cut it. Because you don't want to be 1/32 of an inch off, because you're doing a very expensive, molding or something like that. So I know people like this, carpenters and stuff, and Shudra. They actually feel the numbers and stuff like that in some of their body. You know? So if you get a bigger body, you can hang on to more information, more knowledge and stuff like that and so on. You know? So they're bodily, so they, Prabhu said the Asuras are generally strongly built and described here, and therefore their mental condition is very sound, because our mental condition in this capacity, in the mode of ignorance, is based upon our body. You know? And if our body is a mess, okay, we're a mess. If our body is good, we're good. Yeah. So, and myself, I know in social relations, even in ISKCON, if somebody is a little bit bigger, good looking, and even they may be very proud, and they may be in some administrative position because they can kind of get things done, but actually have a lot of ego, a lot of, you know, of vanity, and they actually want to step on people a little bit to you know, feel good about who they are and bring people down and stuff, you know. So my kind of reaction is just to accept it, that they have a right to step on me, because they are big and handsome. Okay, they are big and handsome, and they're successful. They can accumulate auspicious paraphernalia, and they can accumulate auspicious associates, you know, male and female. You know, and so because of this, then your environment is telling you the Asuras are generally strongly built, as described here. And this is general. Huh? These Asuras in general are strongly built, described here. And so kind of the opposite side of the thing would be, as soon as we see somebody who is strongly built, do we assume he's an Asura? That would kind of in some ways be interesting too, kind of a negative aspect of people who are strongly built and handsome and everything else. You might, right from the very beginning, have a little bit of, you know, perspective that we might be dealing with a demon. Just because he is good-looking and strongly built. And therefore, their mental condition is very sound, and their prowess is also extraordinary. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, having received the boon that they would not be killed by any other living entity within the universe, were almost immortal, and thus they were completely fearless. Okay. Text 23, on not finding Indra and the other demigods who had previously been intoxicated with power, the chief of the Daityas, seeing that they had all vanished before his might, roared loudly. Yeah. So the other side of the thing, too, is that the demoniac tendency is there for everybody. So Indra and everybody else, they're not demons, but it's easy to get this tendency. know? So if we have some ability, the saw, we should be cautious, be careful. The very fact that we have these abilities, physical and mental abilities, is going to be then a tendency for us to start to become proud. Janmaishwarya Shruta Sribir Edama something. Queen Kunti says, you know, people who are intoxicated with a good birth and a good family, Americans, you know, wealth, power, Aishwarya, a good education, they're trained in grammar and how to speak properly and how to pick out different kinds of words that communicate subtle nuances of different meaning like that, you know. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shrubir, and they're beautiful. You know, nice bodily features, not gross, you know, and these are cultivated by growing up nicely and so many things. They cannot call feelingly upon the holy names like that. You know? So here is Hiranyakasipu, Hiranyaksha are put into a position where it's going to be a miracle if they can become devotees. Of course, they don't. You know? But this is the actual position is just such that, you know, maybe again, they're a special case, falling down from the spiritual world. But if we have some desires to be like this or that, then we get a certain body which will allow us to forget for Krishna forever. How's it go? Mama Ivanka Jivaloka. No. Mata Smritir. Matah Smritir. Jnanam Apovanam Cha. For me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, like that. So the purport Prabhupada says, if we want to forget Krishna, then Krishna will arrange it so we will forget Krishna forever, I think, like that. You know? But not forever, but it seems like it, and so on. You know? So this is their situation, their psychological and everything else situation like that. And they couldn't find Indra because they had all been intoxicated. But Hiranyaksha never gave up. He didn't become frightened or anything else, just at the very end. He kept his mentality. But Indra and others, when there's some problem like that, they're in the mode of ignorance. So, okay, so then, whap, they get hit. And then their tendency is to become afraid or take shelter of the Lord, like that. And then they engage in devotional service in the mode of ignorance, which is devotional service out of fear. And that can, of course, be promoted then to devotional service in the mode of passion and finally in goodness. On not finding Indra and the other demigods who have previously been intoxicated with power, the chief of the daityas, seeing that they had all vanished before his might, roared loudly. Yeah. Translation. After, 21, after returning from the heavenly kingdom, the mighty demon, who was like an elephant in wrath, for the sake of sport, dived into the deep ocean, which was roaring terribly. Okay. Yeah. Translation. On his entering the ocean, the aquatic animals who formed the host of Varuna were stricken with fear and ran far away. It says they ran far away. I guess they swam far away. Huh? They swam far away. Thus Hiranyaksha showed his splendor without dealing a blow. Yeah. We have some interest background in martial arts, karate. And I was looking at this one bookstore one time, and there was like one guy published a book on the 12, actually there's a different kind of word there, 12 meanest men who existed at the current time, according to his estimation. And they were different fighters and stuff like that. And one of them was a Japanese police officer, and he was like, you know, was winning all these competitions, everything else, you know. And he was a street guy who would go right in these real tough areas and be breaking up, like, you know, fights between, you know, real heavy fighters, you know, in bars and stuff, and really intense moments and stuff with knives. And he said he had never one time actually used physical violence. And his look and his demeanor were enough. He just, like, people just look at this guy and they could tell, you know, this guy is, you know, can annihilate all of us and stuff like that and so on. So same way Hiranyaksha, just such his demeanor and everything else is that nobody even wants to fight with him. Yeah. On his entering the ocean, the aquatics, you know, ran hither and thither. Okay. Purport. Materialistic demons sometimes appear to be very powerful and are seen to establish their supremacy throughout the world. Materialistic demons sometimes appear to be very powerful and are seen to establish their supremacy throughout the world. So, but both these things, it says they appear to be very powerful and they are seen like that. So they actually are not powerful, and actually they haven't established their supremacy. But it looks like that. Here also it appears that Hiranyaksha, by his demoniac strength, actually establishes supremacy throughout the universe. And the demigods were afraid of his uncommon power. Not only were the demigods in space afraid of the demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, backwards there, but so also were the aquatic animals within the sea. Like that. So again, our perspective is that we're caught in the gross Bhumandala view of reality. We see an ocean, we see the sky, we see space, but we become a little bit more intelligent, detached, and then we go around with the mystical powers. Of course, you're not mystical. You're not absorbed in the movie anymore. As soon as you become a little bit unabsorbed in the movie, you realize that there are actually human beings with bodies around you, like that. Your family is there with you, something. And then somebody's sitting next to you. They came in a little bit after the movie started. And suddenly you realize that it's your ex-wife's new husband is sitting next to you, and he hasn't noticed you, and you just suddenly realize, oh my God, and your ex-wife's on the other side of him, and my God, what's going to happen next? You know, and you see somebody up in the balcony, like loaded, four guys up in the balcony with black masks on, loading AK-47s and stuff. So that, you know, it's, how did he know that? How did he know all these things? We were watching the movie too. We didn't see these things. Because it's there. We're just absorbed. One time devotees were out in Vrindavan. It was in the beginning of Prabhupada. They were seeing all this terrible garbage and trash and, you know, street dogs with their tails broken sideways with sores on their entire bodies and beggars wearing rags in the winter, you know. And Prabhupada said, actually, there's a little particle of dust covering your eyes. And when you remove that, you'll see the real Vrindavan Dham, like that. You know, so this is what happened. It appears that poverty, disease, you know, and all these things are covering Vrindavan, but actually they're not. They're there for a certain purpose. Everything that happens in Vrindavan is there for a certain purpose, like that. Apparently, Guru Das, he was talking about was it Govardhan? As far as I understand, in the Guinness Book of Records, it lists Govardhan as the hottest inhabited place on the face of the earth. Like that. And I know one devotee, Sukadev, he was Bhakti Sudhaman Maharaj, a disciple. One second here, I'm fighting with my robot. Okay. I got to do that. I got to do this. I got to do that. Okay. Yeah, now we're okay. And Bhakti Sudhaman Maharaj took over this very old Manipuri temple. Manipuri is had localized in Radhakund. And so he gave a donation to the king of Manipur, who was the head Saivite for Gopal Temple, which is right off the Parikrama Path. You can look out the front door and you see Radhakund there, right across the Parikrama Path. Nice little temple. Maybe you know his samadhi is there now, Bhakti Sudhaman Maharaj. So anyway, it's a very old place. And the Pujari, there was also Brijbasi. Yeah, I forgot I was talking about. Okay. So anyway, all right, we're covered now. Oh yeah, so Govardhan. So when they took over the place, of course, it hadn't had much maintenance, and Maharaj brought one of his architect friends from Manipur, and he looked at the whole thing. And he was describing like what could be done, what need to be done, and one thing he said was save as many of the bricks as you can, because he says you cannot buy bricks like this now. These are solid and everything else and so on. So they were doing the renovation work. And Sukadev was staying there. Brahmacharya is, you know, kind of supervising on behalf of Maharaj. And he got malaria or something and had to go into the Govardhan village, you know, from Radhakund for treatments and stuff. And it was like maybe like, what do you say? It would be like maybe like 120 in the daytime and drop down to a very, very comfortable 95 degrees at night. like that. And then there were mosquitoes. Okay, mosquitoes. And the electricity in Radhakund then, and probably even now, wasn't very reliable. And of course, those buildings were very solid because, you know, you want to keep out the monsters and the thieves and that kind of stuff. So, and then the mosquitoes were so small, they would go right through a regular mosquito net. So you had to get this very fine mosquito net, which didn't allow for much air circulation. So there you are, and it's like maybe 120 in the day and maybe 140, really, when some of the gusts off the Rajasthan desert come across, at least 140, and you cannot breathe the air. You have to kind of cover your face with a chadar like that and stuff. So dropping down to maybe 95 degrees at night with malaria, and the air, and then the fan goes off at 12 o'clock at night. There's no air circulation. So anyway, Gurudas asked Prabhupada, he said, well, Prabhupada, why does it get so, like, you know, hot and everything else intolerable in Govardhan? And Prabhupada said, because Krishna wants to see if you're serious. Krishna wants to see if you're serious or not. You know. So all these things have a purpose. You know, dogs, you're becoming a street dog in Vrindavan. But what you did, you don't deserve to be in ISKCON anymore. You don't deserve to be in Vrajatantra's movement anymore. But he's so kind that he just gives you an opportunity to toss you into a street dog being eaten by worms on your skin, fighting for garbage, you know. But in your heart, you know, it's in Vrindavan and I deserve this, you know. And it's an opportunity for me to get purified, you know. Thank you, Krishna. You know. So that's Vrindavan. It sometimes appears to be very powerful, the demons. They seem to have established their supremacy throughout the world, you know. Here it also appears that Hiranyaksha, by his demoniac strength, actually established his supremacy throughout the universe. And the demigods were afraid of his uncommon power. Even the devatas, this guy could control fire, air, water, wind. Not only were the demigods in space afraid of the demons, Hiranyaksha and Hirakanyakasipunyaksha, but also were the aquatic animals within the sea. So on the right here, we have different kinds of empires. And when I was doing this, I was kind of thinking, you know, are they demoniac or not? And I would say that the thing about Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu was that they were clearly, completely demoniac. It's kind of like Jagai and Madai. You know, they were, one time, I think it was this old Brahmin, very nice old Brahmin, maybe 95 years old. And he could barely see and walk. So his little granddaughter or something was helping him to walk down to the great-granddaughter, maybe like 16 years old or something, helping him to walk, you know, down to take his bath and everything at the ghat, and they would talk and stuff. And very sweet, you know, beautiful young girl, virgin girl. And then Jagai and Madai one time were hanging out by the bathing place, and they saw her and them, and Jagai quickly said to Madai, Hiranyakasipu quickly said to Hiranyaksha, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so then Jagai ran away. Then Madai went over and started talking to the Brahmin and very respectfully. He said, oh, sir, and I saw you coming here, and I had to ask you some questions about, you know, philosophy, this and that. And while I was saying this, then Jagai had snuck behind him and knelt down. And then Madai pushed him. He fell into the water, hit his head and drowned and died. And they drug the girl off into the bushes and raped her. So they weren't like, you know, Walt Disney demons. They were real monsters, you know. And so Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha were real monsters. And the thing is, Ravana and all these people, they had some nice character. But what was the nice character for? Because it made being evil even better. They would give charity. They would think of themselves as also being the best people and everything else and so on, you know. And so they had spread this all over the universe. I was looking at different empires. Here we have the Roman Empire on top with their symbol, SPQR, Senatus Populus Quid Romana. Senatus Populus Quid Romana. The Senate and people of Rome greet you and trample you under their feet and turn you into slaves and exploit you and everything else, you know. And again, they were extremely organized, extremely, you know, what's the word, in many ways like that, so successful. You know? They fought with Carthage over the Mediterranean in the Punic Wars, and they defeated them, you know, long battle. They fought with the Egyptian Egyptian dynasties, and I guess even the Persian, I guess, had already been defeated pretty much, Persia, you know, by Alexander and the Greeks. And then all the way to England, Hadrian's Wall spread across the northern part of England like that. On the other side, I'm not sure how far they went, you know. But actually, for their time and for their transportation mode, it was quite an incredible empire. But the basic principle was the enjoyment for Rome, you know, and that kind of principle like that, you know. So it was basically demoniac empire. And they were powerful. You know, what could you do once they took charge of your kingdom? The next we have the Islamic Empire. Now here is Algeria, Azerbaijan, Maldives, Mauritania, Turkey, and Turkmenistan. They all use the Islamic symbol of the star and the moon like that. And of course, you know, in its pure form, Islam is completely transcendental. It's completely a faith in a one creator and service to him and love for all mankind. But all these things become mixed up then, and the dynasties then spread, and you know, the leaders become materialistic with wine, women, and gambling, and all these kind of things, and exploiting people also. And of course, here's another empire. It went all the way across Africa, all the way up into to Spain, and spread on the other sides, I guess, into Persia, and all the way down into India, no? And beyond India, out into Borneo. Malaysia, Indonesia. So again, it was a massive empire. And of course, the next demoniac empire is United States of America, like that. And it's interesting because we're inside the thing. And so, of course, the propaganda is to make us feel like we're actually not demons, and how much are we demons? It's a whole discussion, and we have a good standard from Krishna consciousness to discuss these things. I would say it's less than it was now, but I would kind of in some ways, of course, maybe the height of the American power was established in World War II, you know, because that was the time when we fought with the European powers, the European kings, and established it all the way to Russia. Then with Russia, we were stopped. On the opposite side, we went all the way to Japan, and then basically almost just lost by the size aspect. Because China was a cooperative government, Chiang Kai-shek, but again we lost control with Mao, and in India this kind of kept its what we call it, alliance with Russia apparently, but again very very extensive empire, but different. There wasn't maybe so much exact directly use of force in many situations. I brought this point up before because it's amazing. There's something like, what it is, like maybe like, you know, 45 aircraft carriers in the whole world. Functional aircraft carriers in the whole world comes down to about 45. And most of those aren't even like full aircraft carriers. They're for like, you know, helicopters and vertical takeoff planes. Planes that can take off vertically and then rotate their engines and then fly horizontally. Most of those. And only, I think it's three countries or four countries have more than one. England used to have one, but it's not even listed anymore. So I guess they're not even maintaining their aircraft carrier anymore. But the something like Italy has two or something, and of course one of them they just, you know, float around every now and again. But not really. The other countries that have more than two are just very minor. But the United States has something like eight, you know, eight or ten, and every single one of them is a full super carrier with atomic power source, which can run maybe something like for 7 years without coming back. And every single one of them, of course, has enough firepower to destroy most nations on the face of the earth. And of course, how much money does it, you know, cost to maintain those things? One devotee, he was joined the Navy, and he told him, he was a second generation guy some time ago. He said, I'm thinking about joining up, but I'm a vegetarian and I'm strict about that. And they showed him, no, you can, you know, you can join up. And he said, finally he got on the Enterprise, this big aircraft carrier. And he had something, it was something like maybe like about, you know, 5,000 people was the crew of that thing. Something, maybe, I don't know, maybe 2,000, I'm not sure which it was. But it was like big, it was a whole floating city. And they had something like 25 different dining areas, and you were kind of assigned to something, this and that, had to make some kind of adjustment, you know. But there were, out of 25, there was something like about like a, 9 of them which had vegetarian options and stuff like that and so on, you know. And, of course, the battle group would be one aircraft carrier, maybe 3 cruisers and, you know, four battleships, four destroyers, you know. And so this is the American Empire backed up by this great military strength and espionage and everything else. Then they were able to really to do their business. One story, I mean, tell two stories when you've heard them. One was that most U.S. Sugar for soft drinks was coming from the Philippines, from sugarcane. But then they discovered they could actually produce it cheaper from sugar beets, growing sugar beets in the U.S. Okay, so they just closed down all their sugar operations in the Philippines, and maybe within 1 year. And it just tossed thousands and thousands of people out of work with no economy whatsoever. And some people who were older people or whatever, children and stuff, actually died from malnutrition and everything else like that and so on. But that's business, and that's business. You know, that's demoniac. You know? And, of course, the other one I mentioned was Nestle. You probably heard this before, that Nestle was giving free baby formula to these girls way up in the highlands of Bolivia. And these are very simple people with just, you know, very primitive people, very simple. And so they would get this propaganda that if your baby drinks this Nestle milk formula, then he'll grow up and be big and strong like a North American. He'll be able to go to college and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, these young girls and families were just totally enamored with this. So they gave them just enough baby formula for the babies. They kept giving it to them until their natural breast milk had dried up. Okay, and now they cannot change over to giving their babies breast milk because they don't have any. It's dried up. So now they're forced to buy the baby formula. Now there's a marketing scheme, eh? That's a very intelligent marketing scheme. But many of these girls couldn't afford the formula. And so the babies died of malnutrition. Babies died of malnutrition. And the most bizarre, weird thing on earth is that at least sometimes, I'm not sure how often it was, that when they would put the babies in the grave, they put a little can of the baby formula on the grave like that stuff. So this got back to the American population, and boy, Nestle's had to go through an unbelievable propaganda campaign to get its image back of being your friendly funny milk people like that. So. Many things. Traveling outside the U.S., you may have experienced this too. Well, for example, 9/11 was bizarre. We took off from Florida to go to South America. We had a change of planes or in Central America. We landed there. I was just walking around. All these people were gathered around the bar looking at the television. There was some kind of fire on the television, and it's some kind of hotel fire or something. But actually what it was, that was the November 11th attack. And we'd taken off just like maybe like 20 minutes before they closed down all U.S. airspace, we got out. So we were outside the country when the whole thing was being, being carried on like that, being all the aftermath. And generally speaking, in South America, all over where I was going, the kind of attitude was that it wasn't the right thing. You know, no, this wasn't a good thing. This was a bad thing that people had done like that and killing people. But considering how Americans treat people in other countries, it wasn't at all surprising that somebody had done this. And that was kind of like, you know, what the general attitude towards that activity was. So looking at other people from different places, you know, the American ideal was, you know, blonde hair, blue-eyed, 6'4", big muscles, carrying a BAR automatic weapon into the Guadalcanal and blowing all them damn Japs to pieces and that stuff. It was, you know, very racist. On the other side, I think it was even more racist on the German and Japanese side, as far as I can tell. But Americans had their fair share of it also in terms of I am this body, my family relations and stuff are the supreme. All the criminals in movies at that time had a mustache. Your name, you have a mustache, your name would be either Blackie or Petey. All the criminals, Blackie or Petey. And they had mustaches, you know, so on. So very, you know, kind of simple consciousness in many ways. access to mystical powers, but in the heart, no access to higher intelligence or moral values, so on. Materialistic demons sometimes appear to be very powerful and seem to establish their supremacy throughout the world. Yeah. Then we go on down to one more here. This was actually, I think it was Ashok. Who was this? I forgot who this was. And it wasn't Ashok. It's somebody else. It's the Gupta. It's the Gupta. It's the bottom flag is the Gupta dynasty. You know? And so these things are everywhere, and it's just common people. You can't escape from it, you know, in a gross sense. So Krishna appears this to happen. Krishna wants to shake up the demigods. He wants to shake us up, you know. So again, maybe we have some kind of president, you know, throughout the history of the United States. Okay, the whole government, or if you're a black person during slavery. America also experiencing these things. But in any case, if we're devotees, then we should understand, okay, this is good. This is going to purify me. And ultimately, it won't disturb the Sankirtan, you know. It actually has its own perspective within the Sankirtan. The people will become more, many people, sane people will become more interested in actually looking for some kind of transcendental solutions to their problems like that. Text 26. Moving about in the ocean for many, many years, the mighty Hiranyaksha smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace, and reached Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna. There's a picture of Varuna riding on some kind of strange animal. It's called a Makara. So if you just, you know, read Prabhupada's books regularly, you'll develop incredible vocabulary, everything else like that. Like this word smote. What does that mean? I'm asking Christopher Columbus here. He smote the waves. This is just to strike them, you know, but strike them with some personal, like, you know, feeling of power like that and so on. So many times, if you actually just look up the words you don't know and stuff, you'll develop a very, 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 very big vocabulary, you know. Varuna, Prabhupada says, is supposed to be the predominating deity of the waters, and his capital, which is known as Vibhavari, is within the watery kingdom. So he can't have a body like us. He has to have a different kind of body and everything else. 27. Vibhavari is the home of Varuna, lord of the aquatic creatures and guardian of the lower regions of the universe, where the demons generally reside. There, Hiranyaksha fell at Varuna's feet like a low-born man, and to make fun of him, he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord." So the section is so dramatic, you know. We just have to have somebody make a beautiful drama out of this whole thing. This whole Bhagavatam, if it could be made into like a really good drama with good acting and stuff, you know. Even Sunday Feast and puppet shows would do a lot, you know. But good actors and everything else, it would just really penetrate the heart. And experiencing these higher tastes, these higher stories, we give up the lower stories. Purport, the demoniac persons always challenge others and tries to occupy others' property by force. Here these symptoms are fully displayed by Hiranyaksha, who begged war from a person who had no desire to fight. Isn't that exactly it? You know? The German Nazi Empire, they tried to expand themselves. The British, they're conquering everybody else. We Americans took away the property of the Indians. Of course, the Indians probably took it away from somebody else. Okay. And actually, Nitya Gaurasundara just got back from India. He was flying, it was a Gulf Airway or something like that. And he actually went through customs in Arabia, Yemen or wherever it is like that. And Dr. Desai came back, and he went through American customs in Canada. So the Americans customs authority now extends into the Middle East. It extends on up into Canada. Yeah, and we're taking over other people's property by force. Yeah? And of course, force can take other people's property is also their prestige, their fame, their name. You know, their right to their ideas and to express themselves. And so you see in this area. You know, somebody will just be looking to put people down, to put down their ideas, to put down their perspectives, you know, to put down their right to analyze things and understand things like that. And always ridiculing other people. 28, you are the guardian of an entire sphere and a ruler of wide fame, having crushed the might of arrogant and conceited warriors, and having conquered all the daichas and danavas in the world, you once performed the Rajasuya sacrifice to the Lord. Thus mocked by an enemy whose vanity knew no bounds, the worshipful Lord of the waters waxed angry. Yet again, waxed, another word. But by dint, another word, of his reason, he managed to curb the anger that had sprung up in him. And he replied, O dear one, we have now desisted from warfare, having grown too old for combat. Okay. Prabhupada says, as we see, warmongering materialists always create fighting without reason. Translation. You are so skilled in war that I do not see anyone else but the most ancient person, Lord Vishnu, who can give satisfaction in battle to you. Therefore, O chief of the Asuras, approach him, who even heroes like you mention with praise. Okay. So Bruin has got a very subtle task here to do. He's got to flatter Hiranyaksha enough so he'll have his ego will increase. At the same time, he's got to glorify Vishnu enough so that Hiranyaksha will be agitated to fight with him. Like that. So we see in the Bhagavatam so many preaching strategies. You know, but we just take these points and take them to heart. Take them to heart, all these stories. And then we'll be very, very competent in every situation, whoever we meet, to be able to deal with them. You know, to deal with them. Every single psychological circumstance you can encounter is in Srimad Bhagavatam. Purport. Aggressive materialistic warriors are actually punished by the Supreme Lord for their policy of unnecessarily disturbing world peace. Therefore, Varuna advised Hiranyaksha that the right course to satisfy his fighting spirit would be to seek to fight with Vishnu. One more verse. Varuna continued, on reaching him, you will be rid of your pride at once and will lie down in the field of battle surrounded by dogs for eternal sleep. It is in order to exterminate wicked fellows like you and to show his grace to the virtuous that he assumes his various incarnations like Varaha. So Varaha hadn't appeared yet, you know, but it being mentioned here. Purport. Asuras do not know that their bodies consist of the five elements of material nature, and that when they fall, they become objects of pastimes for dogs and vultures. Dogs and vultures. Varuna asked Hiranyaksha to meet Vishnu, in his boar incarnation, so that his hankering for aggressive war would be satisfied, and his powerful body would be vanquished. Wow. So, great, powerful satisfaction at this level like that. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So, any questions or comments? Or is everybody ready to go out now and engage in Sankirtan?
On the discussion of invoking fear in others just by one's look, Maharaj gave the example of a police officer. I was thinking if people like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, my understanding were actually quite handsome, but they could, as you said, like lift an eyebrow and invoke such fear. I think we probably all know that, maybe even from our parents. They could be so loving, but then they could give a look that could just, you know, go right to your heart with fear. Like, for example, some dogs are so cute. But I remember back in the 60s when the Vietnam riots at our college, College Park, Maryland. And I remember that there was riots going on, big riots in the streets. which both Raghava and I attended. Not that either of us were particularly political. It was just kind of an interesting, rowdy scene going on, and burning down buildings. It was pretty crazy. But they couldn't control the crowd. They tried dropping all those different types of gases and so on, tear gas, flying over with helicopters. None of it worked. But as soon as they showed up with the police dogs, those police dogs are so scary looking that, I don't think there's ever an incident where they had to let one go. But when they walked down with a line, they went right down the main drag, the main street where everyone was, with a bunch of police dogs on leashes. Everybody left. I mean, everybody scattered. So anyway, I was just thinking about how things invoke fear by the look.
Yeah, actually. Other side of the point is all the opposing protesters, all they would have to do is walk out with one lion on a leash.
Yeah.
The lion, just look at all the police dogs running down the road.
I guess, yeah, there's always one above.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was nobody above like at in their time, Ravana. Hiranyakashipu,
yeah.
There was no, to my knowledge, there was no demon above them. It had to be the Supreme Lord.
No, they first said they established their authority throughout the universe, even on the level of thought. You know, whatever you could think, you couldn't think thoughts. Difficult to think thoughts that weren't full of your Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyakashipu's power and everything else and supremacy. Terrifying. But then at that point, then we have to pray to Krishna from the heart, and sincerely from the heart, and that's good. You know? And those catastrophes come one after another. The demoniac situations, these problems and everything else. You know? Help! Ah! My phone! Narahari, there we go, yeah, okay.
Sorry, I had to mute you, Narahari. For some reason, it got real loud. Let me know if you need to unmute you.
Maybe he's putting his goldfish into his blender or something. So anyway, this is very, very, this whole thing is like, there's no like logical, almost any logical things to talk about in these purports. Almost all directly like, what do you call it? Like, Leela and stuff, something you understand more emotional. It's all emotional understanding to a large degree. And of course, emotions are unlimited. That's the whole point. Science tries to eliminate emotion in their structure. You know? But what happens is that actually emotion is actually at the basis of science. Science itself is based upon emotional ras and stuff. So if you become purified in these emotions and to wake up, then we can go all the way to the Ras Lila with this, every place in between. Yeah.
I know I'm going to bring up something that's kind of superficial, as I always do, but anyway. I was kind of curious how there's a description of these big, powerful demons, but then they say they have ankle bells. I don't know. I always found that curious.
You think it's kind of feminine or something?
Yeah, doesn't it seem?
Well, real men don't wear ankle bells. Actually, I heard Kritikarma told me that a prophet said in Los Angeles, he said, okay, if you all wear ankle bells tomorrow morning, I'll teach you how to dance. And they couldn't get them, so they missed out on an opportunity like that and stuff, you know. Yeah. I guess I'm not sure exactly. It's interesting because, you know, somebody actually our Manipuris, they would be traveling and stuff, and it was very clear, you know, masculine and feminine distinction and you know, everything else and so on, you know. And they're very, you know, tough guys from the mountains, but they have same things too. They liked, you know, fragrant smells and flowers and all this kind of stuff. And several of the teachers pointed out to the kids like that, for traveling, how they can be graceful and all that kind of stuff, but there's no way you're going to think they're not masculine, and so on. So I don't know what it, maybe it's because, again, we're predominated by this northern, you know, German culture, and northern German culture, and, you know, no sensitivity, no sentiment, you know, for men, yeah. In so many cultures, you spend embracing at the airport and holding hands and stuff, but if you see two guys embracing and holding hands, you think, oh, okay, so take off.
Things like earrings were always considered, like, pretty much totally feminine. And I remember the first, like, really powerful guy that had an earring. You got to be pretty old to remember this, because this probably was back in the 50s, was Mr. Clean. He was, like, the first.
Yeah.
You remember him? He was shaved head, and he had an earring.
He was kind of a sailor pirate type guy, huh?
Yeah, kind of a sailor piratey looking guy, and he had one, I think, one earring, and that was long before piercing and.
Not two.
But he was way. No, I think he had two. I think he just had one earring, but I could be wrong. No, my memory's not that great.
Two would have been feminine, but one earring.
one earring was cool, but anyway, yeah,
well,
I think.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
You know, since we're talking about this, can I ask another dumb question? Also about, he's got a Vyjayanti garland. How in the world can you fight with a garland? Yeah, there's so many descriptions about, you know, like battles, and they're all wearing garlands. How do they do that?
There's so many natural sources. In Hawaii, it's not a problem, right? Yeah. In Hawaii,
you can get garlands anywhere in Hawaii. I mean, it's 7-Eleven, you can get flower garlands.
But in our culture, it's one thing too. Men are always garlanded with colorful neckties, right? You know, if you're wearing a colorful necktie, is so common. It's a garland. You know, yeah. In fact, it's almost the one ornament that a man's allowed to have is a colorful necktie.
I always thought that whoever invented the necktie should go to a special hell where he hangs for eternity from a tie around his neck. I never liked wearing a tie. I never would wear a tie. I think I had to wear them in Sunday school. And I guess when I got old enough, I just refused to wear a tie. Even in the wedding industry, occasionally someone would want me to wear a tie or something like that, and I just tell them, you know, you have to find somebody else. I'm not doing it.
I don't do ties.
I won't do a tie.
Yeah, differently. I know one devotee, he said it's like a tongue, some dog's tongue hanging out on his neck. There's symbolism in all these things, different things like that and so on. Like, I guess we should go. We're supposed to get on this thing here. We have finally trying to get a hold of Ram Giridhari, the executive secretary of the Ministry of Education. It's been 2 weeks since I've been able to catch him. Now we're starting to have some catastrophes come up, you know, in terms of the developing education within ISKCON, like that. So thank you all so much. It's been very wonderful.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Association here with all these demons and other people like that. And I guess we'll see you next week. Next week, I guess we'll be in Texas. Yeah, I guess we'll be in Texas. Yeah. Okay, we should be okay, though. We should be a good class. Okay, thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.